and welcome to another episode of Gopher Gridiron Radio. I'm Luke Buer.
And I'm GopherDigest.com publisher Ryan Burns. We welcome you back to what I'm sure will be an eventful and informative podcast here, breaking down the Kent State victory 10-7 on Saturday. So, as always, to break down the victories in every game, every Gopher game, we have former Eden Prairie Eagle and Gopher center Derek Burns joining us tonight. So, Derek, how are you on this Monday evening?
Doing well, guys. Thanks for having me back, and excited to talk good, bad, and everything in between.
All right, well, let's start with that defensive side of the football, and we'll start with you, Derek. The defense was just outstanding this last game. You know, statistically, it was kind of off the charts. They hardly crossed the 50-yard line. What were your impressions of the defense?
I thought first and foremost, the Gopher defense was just physically dominant over Kent State. And, you know, I think that really – it didn't – schemes, I like to talk schemes, but frankly – it didn't really matter. Kent State tried various things and just didn't have a lot of success all day. That's not to say they didn't put in effort and the game plan and things like that. But overall for the Gopher defense, again, just was physically, I think Kent State was overmatched. Now, that being said, I thought the Gophers didn't let that affect them and lull them to sleep, if you will. Mm-hmm. And I thought, if you go position by position, the defensive line was, again, just an exceptional game. Just got off blocks consistently, whether it was versus the run or the pass. I thought that Stephen Richardson continued his performance from last week, especially against the pass, showed some exceptional plays. And I thought that Alex Keith showed up pretty big in the game. He had some a few plays, a deflected pass, and some hurries on the quarterback and tackles, and was just sort of all over the field. So I thought that, again, the defensive line was dominant and just, you know, just shed blocks and was there. And they weren't just defending gaps. I mean, they were making plays.
I was impressed that Derek was a guy who I think probably hasn't got enough recognition as he probably should through three games. Is Alex Keith, the senior defensive end there. He's battled injuries the last two seasons and even at the start of fall camp this year, but he's been healthy through three games and it's shown. He's been one of the guys at defensive end who's been able to get some pressure, and he even said in the press conference after, I think he played his best game of his entire career on Saturday. I believe he had five tackles, a tackle for loss, and two passes batted down. So, he's been, I mean, surprisingly explosive for a guy, again, who's just benefiting from being healthy and from this Gopher defensive line rotation that they like to do so much, where they have eight guys that they try to rotate in there, probably a 60-40 split. I don't have the snap count in front of me here, but I was impressed with Alex. I think Scott FK was another guy I was impressed with. If you couldn't tell now, I think if you go back and watch the film, you watch number 97, I said he's pretty close to healthy. I mean, I believe Derek had it in his Twitter breakdown this afternoon that, Scott, he affected the game, absolutely. Didn't he cross base and bull rush and force the quarterback just threw it in the ground, which is still mind-boggling to me that wasn't intentional ground for whatever reason. But, again, you know, there, Gophers won, all that matters. But, yeah, between Scott FK, Stephen Richardson showed up again. Probably is not as much on the stat sheet, but, again, when it came down to those last two drives where Kent State could potentially make things pretty interesting, Stephen, he bull rushed a double team about 5 yards deep into the backfield, which is ridiculous if you think about two grown men, 300 pounds, against Stephen Richardson, and he pushes them both back 5 yards. So I was pretty happy with the defensive line again. Hank Ekpe and Theron Cochran are still, there were no sacks besides Julian Huff there, so still working on getting some pressure there. But again, I think that's schematically dependent. And so, I mean, I would love to see one of the two get a sack here next week, but, the way this Gopher defense is playing, it's lights out. So I was very happy with the defensive line play on Saturday.
All right, so let's transition and talk a little bit about this linebacking core. We saw a lot of Cody Polk this weekend, and he, I believe, got the start. So I don't know if he's kind of solidified himself as a starter, but Derek, let's get your thoughts on the linebacking core and how they played.
I thought, like the defensive line, they played very well all around in all phases. I think the previous two games they've done a good job of running from sideline to sideline, being able to chase down plays and disrupt things. I thought that this game what they showed was defeating blocks. I was very impressed by that. The ability again in the run game to come up and attack. And defeat blocks. I mean, there were plays where Kent State had the numbers interior, and you know they had the plays called, and if they get them blocked up, you know they're looking at a nice game. But the linebackers just shed blockers and were able to make plays and just refused to be blocked. So that was nice to see. You mentioned Cody Polk had a very good day. His pursuit and some of the tackles, you know, downfield a little bit and sideline to sideline aren't always the most celebrated. It's not like a 6-yard tackle for a loss, but those are important. I mean, and will definitely be important as the season goes on. And you need those guys. You need to tackle with population and have guys that can run. And that's going to be nice to see and something to keep an eye on. And I guess, again, all around, I would say, run and pass, but just a solid performance from the linebackers. And like last week, didn't think that there was a real big drop one way or another as guys rotated in and out. I know Ryan probably watched it closer, but having the different crews shuttle in and out, it didn't seem like there was any glaring changes in terms of performance. So, all around, very impressive performance from them. With again the highlights being the ability to just fill on, get their run fills, reading the plays, being confident, being aggressive. You know, last thing I'll say is when you see a team like the Gopher defense on Saturday being as aggressive as they were in attacking, that's also a tribute to the coaches, which I know we'll talk about later. But when players are unsure and they're tentative and they're reading plays as opposed to attacking plays, that it just shows that they're not ready for things or taking a look at things they haven't seen. Maybe it's formation plays and action. And that was just, it was just kind of the opposite this game. It seemed like they were ready. They were confident. They were attacking and just well prepared. So tip of the cap to the coaches, but I thought the linebackers were very good.
I agree. And it's fun that Minnesota can go, I mean, 6 linebackers deep and have no concerns. I mean, Mike Sherrills has a problem trying to find playing time for guys like Julian Huff and Jonathan Celestine, Everett Williams, guys who are very comparable Big Ten linebackers and who excel once they get on the field. I mean, you look at Jonathan Celestine, who didn't really see any of the field at all against TCU, saw some against Colorado State and select packages and more against Kent State this past weekend, but he's a guy who is being, you know, the 4th or 5th linebacker when most Big Ten teams would love to have him starting and playing 90% of the snaps. So it's really fun to see guys like Cody Polk, guys like Devondre Campbell and Jack Lynn, all guys who have very bright futures, potentially could all be playing on Sundays, and it's fun to watch. And again, you compare these guys with even the secondary. I mean, people, I think, take for granted somewhat what a blessing it is to have this kind of a defense, where most years, I think Gopher fans will agree with me, if the offense didn't show up like they did this past weekend, Minnesota would lose the game by 7 to 10 points at least. But there was never a doubt in my mind when I was sitting up in the press box on Saturday, even with the game being 10-7, that Minnesota would lose the game. And that's true in part because the defense was so just dominating. And it starts with the linebackers in the secondary and obviously the defensive line. So I thought Cody Polk played very well, did a very good job of scraping, getting off blocks, and really just trusting his instincts. It's something that, you know, Jerry Kill and Tracy Clays liked when he was coming out of Iowa Western Junior College. And it's showing up. He's making plays all over the field. Jack Lynn, probably the guy Mike Sherrill trusts most in this linebacking core, and that's why you see him out there probably the most. I bet you he probably has the most snaps of this linebacking core through three games. And then Devondre Campbell, I think, has really cut down on the mental mistakes through three games, which is his biggest question mark coming into this year. So it gives them the flexibility with all these, you know, talented starters to do things with Julian Huff, who obviously had that huge sack late in the fourth quarter there, keeping him fresh all game to absolutely eviscerate that left tackle on a nice swing over inside. So I was very happy with what I saw out of the linebackers on Saturday, and I think that's going to continue into the Big Ten season.
All right, let's talk a little bit about that secondary. As we've mentioned multiple times, this is probably one of the better secondaries we've seen in Gopher history. Looking at what Kent State was able to do, you know, pretty much nothing in the passing game. You know, 10 completions on 28 attempts, you know, for, I don't know, it was like maybe a measly 50 yards. I can't remember off the top of my head. But, you know, just absolutely nothing for them in the passing game. Derek, what did you see out of this secondary this week?
Another impressive performance from the secondary. I will say, and I don't mean to discount it at all, but the Kent State quarterback had a rough day. You know, and that was in part with the Gophers' fast rush and keeping him uncomfortable. But he's got some work to put in. He's got some things to learn. So certainly that factored in a little bit. But that being said, again, impressive performance. They, you know, started off the game running a little bit of off coverage. They mixed in a little bit of zone, and then in pretty short order they were running man press coverage and never really looked back. And, you know, one of the things to look at, I mean, that I saw in this game and something to look at going forward is when they're able to play man press coverage, and I think they were even on some of the inside receivers, even three or four across going man press and maybe one safety deep, That's what allows your front seven to be so aggressive. You know, if the linebackers don't have to determine whether they're going to drop into a hook zone, you know, drop into the flat to cover, you know, a flat route or a screen route and in zone pass coverage, if they can just be focused on covering a running back or if they read run, just getting downhill, that helps them. So that's something to look for. I mean, I'll be looking at that as the season goes on, is to see, you know, you have the secondary continues to play well and to get guys covered, but to see how it affects and helps the other guys on the front. I think we saw that in this game, and hopefully we'll see it moving forward. And you know, lastly, I would say, you know, I don't think they had, unless there was something really that didn't show up on the replay, I don't think they had any breakdowns in coverage. And I know in the first couple of games, I think they've had like a couple per game, and they've certainly been anomalies and not a trend, but I don't think there were any this game. So from a mental standpoint, an exceptional game. And of course, physical standpoint, they just covered people all day. There was nobody open. And they brought corner blitz. They ran man press coverage. I mean, they were all over, you know, helping support run tackling. Just it's fun to watch. So it was another really good game from the secondary, in my opinion.
Absolutely. I think the secondary played a hand in some of the statistics I'm about to throw out that the Gophers' defense accomplished on Saturday. I mean, Minnesota forced 10 punts, which I believe is a PCF Bank Stadium record. They held Kent State to only 142 yards of total offense. And Kent State only had three plays in the Gophers' territory the entire game, and that was because of regardless, they only had three plays in the Gophers' territory. So it was dominating. Eric Murray came to play. You know, Breen Body Calhoun, Kunle Ayende, I thought, had a pretty good game, especially in the second half. He had a couple passes battered away, almost had a pick. So, and the scary part is, fellas, this Demaryius Travis is expected back this week, and if he's back, this secondary is even that much better. Obviously, Kunle Ayende has filled in for him for two games with Ace Rogers and Demaryius out, but Demaryius is an NFL caliber safety, and you know, switching him out with a comparable, you know, the Big Ten, whatever you want to call what Kunle is, Demaryius is an NFL guy. So then all you have, three out of the four starters being, you know, playing on Sundays probably next year. So it's just this secondary just overwhelmed the quarterback. I mean, the pressure wasn't great all day from the defensive line, but the linebackers and the safeties and the corners obviously did a great job of covering guys and really not letting them get any space. So, again, there's not much more you can say about this Gopher defense. And with all the, you know, problems that the offense is having, and that seems to be what I'm hearing about the most is this offense. And I put this out on Twitter last night. I hope that fans can really take and appreciate what this defense did. They didn't allow any points. Obviously, it was a strip fumble returned 80 yards for a touchdown. So they only didn't give up any points and forced TCF Bank Stadium record 10 punts. They literally can't play a better game than what they did. They literally just confused and just dominated every facet of the game. So, again, I hope folks can really appreciate what Tracy Clays is doing with this defense, as it's probably a top 10 unit in the country.
All right, let's.
Like, honestly, it is. So,
yeah.
I just really hope fans appreciate that. And again, as the season goes on, again, you may have your frustrations with the offense, but it's a good thing you have a damn good defense to, you know, rely on if things get tough. So, very excited about the progress of this defense in 3 games, and the exciting part is they only can get better. So, very good.
All right, let's talk about that special teams. You know, because you have a good defense, it's key to have great special teams, and especially punting. You know, Peter Mortel has seemed to do so well. Let's also talk kicking game as well. And Derek, what were your impressions of the special unit?
Well, it's hard to punt and much better. I think of all the punts that he had, maybe one was he'd maybe like to have back. It wasn't a shank, but a little bit shorter punt, but many good punts from the punter, and a couple times in a situation where you have to pin him deep, he did that. Again, I thought the coverage was good, punt coverage was good, punting was great. I thought the kickoff field goal game was good. Not really much to note there, I guess. I was a little bit disappointed in the kick return game, as you mentioned, a lot of punts from Kent State, and I think they're going to need to go back and look at what they're doing on the blocking for punt returns. Everybody looks to the returner and they want him to break a lot of tackles and to make magic happen. But there were a few times where, you know, he broke 3 or 4 tackles, or at least dodged 3 or 4 tackles, and the guys just kept coming. And you got to have more guys blocked up than that. So I think if there's an area to work on in the special teams, which I'm sure the coaches are looking at it, would be punt return. That'll be something to see if they get cleaned up, see if they change their scheme a little bit. It looks like there's, you know, a little bit of growing pains on the return. You know, Ryan mentioned it last week, determining when to pick up a ball, when to let it go, when to fair catch. And I think that'll come. It's a lot of repetition, and that's not an easy place to be back there. And you see guys in the NFL do it all the time and catching balls on the run and things like that. And we want to think that everybody can do that, but that's the best of the best. So I'm sure they'll work with him, but I think that's one area they would look to improve at. But you know, overall, I would think special teams pretty good.
Yeah, I'd have to agree, especially in the punting game. It's again, for Gopher fans who've been around the last, you know, 20 years or so, taking into consideration what Peter Mortel really brought on Saturday, it's 7 punts and 5 put them inside the 20. That is huge, especially in a game of field position where the Minnesota offense is struggling. If you continue to, you know, pin Kent State back inside their 20, they're not going to move the ball against the defense, and that was evident. And so that was probably one of the key factors that maybe overlooked the fact that Minnesota was able to switch field position if this offense would go 3-and-out because of the foot of Peter Mortel. So definitely an all Big Ten kind of performance out of him. 7 punts, averaging 42 yards and 5 being inside the 20. Again, I'd agree with Derek. The punt return game, Craig James, I mean, like Derek said, there were times where he would break 3, 4, 5 tackles, but then it seemed like another wave was coming after him. So I don't know if that was, you know, schematically what was going on, or if, you know, the injuries on the tight end group and the different positions are starting to pile up a little bit, and you're getting guys who maybe got their first action I didn't really pay too much close attention to see who was out on the punt unit, in the punt return unit, excuse me. So there's definitely room for improvement there. Is I think Craig has the ability, as he showed against Colorado State, to definitely bring one back this year. Jalen Myrick and Antonio Johnson back there, I think they're going to bring one back as well. So Ryan Santoso, 1 of 2, within the field goals, made the 42-yard one, and then he missed wide left pretty badly there. But, again, you're going to take what you're going to get from him. He's been much more consistent this year so far. So I think overall, it can't be understated enough how great of a job Peter Martel, the All Big Ten punter from Minnesota, did. And again, 5 punts instead of 20 of his 7, really did a great job of flipping field position and giving the Gophers a chance to win. So, pretty good effort overall.
All right, let's transition and talk offense. Obviously, this is going to be kind of a hot button topic considering the performance we saw on Saturday. Let's start with the offensive line. Running the ball was not terribly effective. Granted, they're against stacked boxes and whatnot. Being the former offensive lineman, Derek, what was your assessment of the offensive line play on Saturday?
Well, I think there's a couple things to consider, a couple things to look at. The first is, as you mentioned, the stacked boxes. I think running through a replay of the game, I don't know that there was a running situation, whether it be down in distance or formation, from Minnesota that Kent did not put at least one extra defender in the box. So if it was, again, a running situation, or if Minnesota had 2 running backs or 2 tight ends, Kent was putting 7 defenders against 6 blockers and 8 defenders against 7 blockers, and even a few times had 0 coverage and put 9 defenders in the box and had guys covered one-on-one on the outside. So you have to consider that when looking at the offensive line performance in the running game, because there were a few plays in the game that they did get them all blocked. And, by virtue of just having an extra defender, they were making the tackle on running plays for, a 3 or 4 yard gain. And, having a strong safety up or an outside linebacker in, as opposed to out in coverage, that's going to happen. You can't, the numbers are just such that they're going to read the run. And if they're not bailing for, thinking it's play action or something like that, they're going to be able to make the play, even if they're not play soft. We saw a lot of that on Saturday. So when looking at the line, just have to keep that in mind. That's just a tough uphill battle to face, and to be able to, to expect those guys to rip off, blocking that creates 8 and 10 yard gains in the running game when you're over a stacked numbers wise in the box, it's a tough proposition. The other part of it is I don't, they struggled executing the offensive line overall. I know we've heard a lot about injuries and guys are banged up, and that's the coaches will confirm that. And I think that did show. I think mentally they're okay. I picked up a couple missed assignments, which, in an entire game with 5 guys, you're going to have at least a couple missed assignments typically. But that really wasn't the story. I think most of the time they knew who they were blocking. They were able to read the defenses. And just struggled executing. I thought, the most disappointing was just seeing that front 7 from Kent State. I just thought was more physical. I just thought they beat them physically, which is a tough pill to swallow, and just not where you want to be. Overall, they had some plays, like I said, where they got it blocked up, and just the virtue of the numbers, we're not going to be getting a large gain out of it, but. They did struggle, again, executing at times. And then in the passing game, I think they had a couple, it's tough. They had a couple, passing plays where they didn't execute blocking, and it's just real visible on TV. And you tend to remember, a couple plays. And I know there was one, I think Kent State rushed 2 and they got, 3 and they got both of the ends, came, clean on Leidner. And it just, you're kind of sitting back going, what's going on with the pass blocking? Well, that was one play, and I think they had a couple like that. But overall, there were some play action passes and some long pass blocking plays where they did okay. So Overall, for the offensive line, I know it's not where they want to be, and I think they're going to continue to work on the make health a priority for that group and try to get some sort of continuity. And it'll be interesting to see if they shuffle guys around again. I think they want to limit doing that and want to just, you know, sort of find a home for these guys and keep them, you know, in their position. So they may move guys around again, and of course they will with injuries, but they may move guys around again, but I think they want to find some continuity and you know, build some consistency. I think that'll be the number one priority.
I remember that play specifically, or what you're talking about, where Kent State rushed three. I went back and watched that play. They actually only rushed two. The nose guard actually dropped off and looked like a spy. And Campion missed the cut block. And I don't remember if it was Lauer or Perzig just got burned, and they both met at the quarterback. And it was just,
yep.
You're shaking your head. But with the offensive line, I talked about this at length today on Gopher Digest. It's the lack of continuity, and it's Minnesota's banged up, and they're just not healthy, and they're going to get, and it showed, and they weren't good. I mean, I'm going to go through some injuries here that are known about this offensive line. So starting left tackle, Jonah Perzig has a shoulder injury from Colorado State. He missed time last week in practice. John Christensen was the starting left guard, is out till at least Halloween probably, as he got his knee scoped. Joe Bjorklund didn't look at, I mean, Derek, you can correct me if I'm wrong, but Joe Bjorklund didn't look near 100%. And
no.
It came out after the game that he's got a bone-on-bone knee injury that he's going to be battling the rest of the season here. So it made sense when you looked at his play, because I was like 100% Joe Bjorklund with some of these plays he was making and getting beat on. It was kind of shaking my head a little bit. So he's not. Josh Campion, the starting right tackle, he's just coming back from a concussion. Ben Lauer, I watched a series of Ben Lauer. It was actually only four plays when he came in, and it wasn't pretty, folks. Ben is not near 100%. He was in on four plays. One was a running play. His guy shed the block for no gain. The second play, he had a false start. The third, his guy burned him and forced Leidner out of the pocket, and he got blasted. And on the fourth one, he got hit on a swim move inside, and Leidner got blasted, and then Perzig was put back in. So I don't think Ben Lauer, I mean, if it was up to me, I think Ben Lauer should try to get healthy. It just wasn't good. Alex Mays, the sophomore tackle, who hasn't even dressed this season, is dealing with some concussion issues. So there's just a slew of injuries. I mean, this group is banged up, and I'm not making an excuse for him. You want depth there, but again, it was clear that they were just manhandled. I mean, there's no other way to put it. I mean, 44 rushes for less than 2.5 yards a carry. I understand, as Derek said, most of the times they were dealing with 7 to 9 man boxes because they couldn't take advantage of the one-on-one matchups on the outside. But I mean, there were times where they should have been, you know, taking advantage of the 7-man box or whatever it was, and it just wasn't good. So, you know, my recommendation, as I wrote today, would be I would sit Joe Bjorklund and Ben Lauer and try to get them healthy for Northwestern. And by doing so, I think that Tyler Moore has to play, and I think he's your starting left guard this week. It's just a less than, I don't even think he's 80%. Joe Bjorklund is just not ideal. And Chill said before the season that Tyler Moore would play, and again, he has experience to guard, as that's where he worked at in the spring and early on in fall camp, but they just need bodies, and it is what it is at this point. I mean, you can complain about pulling red shirts all you want, but for Minnesota to have the best chance to win on Saturday against Ohio, who, by the way, is 3-0, and they beat a Marshall team that beat Purdue, so these guys aren't awful like some other opponents, so I think for Minnesota to have their best chance to win, Tyler Moore has to be your starting left guard. I mean, Derek, what do you think about, what did you think out of Joe Bjorklund, number one? And number two, what are your thoughts on potentially having Tyler Moore being your starting left guard on Saturday?
Yeah, I agree with you that, you know, both in the defensive line blocking and blocking linebackers, that these guys have had trouble. I would say the first couple games, they'd had a little more trouble blocking the second and third level, getting the linebackers and secondary done okay with the defensive line. I thought this game, it showed up in both phases. Again, the physical, I just thought Kent State's defensive line was more physical. And I think as it relates to Joe, I think that showed up. And I think, you know, Coach Kill acknowledged that as well, that he's doing what he can, but it's showing up. And as far as it's such a difficult situation to get those guys healthy, because you've got so many guys that you need for practice to be able to practice. You can't sit half the offensive line. You can't pull them out of practice and have a productive practice. So it's difficult. And those guys, believe me, they're getting all the training, the ice and stimulation and stretching, and, you know, that staff I'm sure is working with those guys every day. But so you do what you can, but it's just too early to be. I guess I would agree with you. I think it's too early to be trying to nurse guys through it, and might have to take some drastic measures here in order to get them healthy, whatever that be. I mean, again, if you have to pull some of these guys out of a few practices or pull them out of hitting at least and have them walking through stuff, and that's what you got to do at this point. It's otherwise it's just going to snowball as the year goes on.
So I've got a lot of questions as well. Like, you know, where's the depth behind this group? Where is it? Well, the issue is your depth's banged up along with your starters. I mean, you look at who's behind these guys. So who would go, who would step up if Josh Campion or Jonah Perzik went down? You have redshirt senior Foster Bush, who I think is probably the swing tackle at this point, just because Ben Lauer, again, is nowhere close to being healthy right now. And so who's behind him? Well, it's true freshman Quinn Oslin, or, I mean, you could say redshirt freshman Luke Rasmussen, but Rasmussen didn't even make the 105 for camp. So there's just not a ton of depth here. I mean, I outlined it in the team center was just, the only other healthy guy on the interior of the offensive line you have is Isaac Hayes, again, a redshirt junior who should be ready to step up. But, I mean, I had my questions about him during fall camp, and I would rather have Tyler Moore out there than Isaac Hayes. I think he gives Minnesota the best chance to win. But, again, you're starting to get into some of these freshmen and walk-ons. And, again, it's Quinn Oslin, it's Brunson Dovich, it's Nick Conley, it's Luke Rasmussen, it's Ted Steber, all redshirt or true freshmen. And so, I mean, Kill said it best after the press conference there. It was just, again, it all starts up front, and there's no magic answer or magic thing he can do to really fix what's going on there. I just think that they need some continuity there, and the frustrating part about it is, they can't get any continuity there because they can't keep enough guys healthy to have them work together for more than two or three quarters. So, you know, for the fans who really want to see something different out of this offensive line come Saturday, I just don't know that it's going to be there. Again, there's new people coming in, new guys getting injured, and until these guys can get healthy and start to develop some continuity, it's going to be a work in progress. So that's my disclaimer.
Speaking of position groups that are struggling with injury, you have the tight end group who's already down Duke Onyanwu, and they're also down Lincoln Plezik. Also Brandon Lingen sat out this game, right? So they're already down three tight ends. So you're playing Noah Scarver. You've got a couple walk-ons, and then you also have Wozniak also in there. Considering how decimated this group's been by injury, I'd like to get your impressions on how, you know, maybe the fourth, fifth, and sixth guys on the depth chart really did, Derek.
I thought in the passing game they did pretty well. I thought that they were able to get, with some play action, they were able to get the tight ends and one-on-one coverage and able to catch a few balls, and the route running looked good. And I think that that'll be something positive to look at as the season goes on, you know, see those guys able to add another dimension, hopefully give some help to the passing game and see where the play calling goes and how they're going to fit these guys in. That being said, on the running, on the blocking side, they need help. That I think is where the lack of depth showed up in this game. They Kent State, as I mentioned before, had a very aggressive defensive line. Their defensive ends really got upfield. Not all teams play that way with the defensive end. Some of them play more of a read. They'll drop guys into shallow zone coverage. They'll even have defensive ends play man coverage against a blocking tight end if he releases into a pass pattern. But these guys were Kent State was – they use their defensive ends and their anchor end, especially to get upfield, to defeat blocks and disrupt plays. And that happened to the Gophers at least two, if not three or four times on Saturday, where they got a push. They got Gophers blockers in the backfield, which changes the route that the running backs get to take and just is very disruptive to the play. So overall, I would say the tight end group, they're doing what they can. They're, you know, guys are having to learn on the fly. They're getting playing time, which is good. And I think in the passing game, saw some nice things. And the running game, they've got work to do. They need some help there. They need guys back in order to do better. I don't think they're where they need to be run blocking at this point. And you know, they need those guys back in order to get to where they need to be.
Yeah, I agree. It's frustrating. And I mean, I fielded questions today about, you know, where's the depth in this tight end group as people are getting frustrated. Well, I can tell you 2 weeks into fall camp, Minnesota had no idea that Lincoln Plezic and Duke Onyanwu, who were projected to be, you know, the starting two wides there, were going to be out. So, and they're potentially out for the entire season. Kill said it again in the last 24 hours. He doesn't know if they're going to be back, and I'd be surprised if they were at this stage from what I've heard. So, and then your other, you know, the third starting tight end is Brandon Lingan, and he was out with a concussion. So you're literally down to your last, you know, sort of upperclassman tight end there, Nate Wozniak, who I thought had played exceptionally well through the first two games, especially in the run blocking fast of the game. But this past Saturday, I thought he struggled. It is what it is. It's a kid trying to get experience, and he's going to have his good games and his bad games. But I wish I could say that, you know, Wozniak played better than he did, but I thought there were far too many times his guy, you know, he disengaged or his guy would get off the block or, you know, he was on skates in the backfield there and it was causing Leidman to have some issues or the running back. So, you know, I think he'll play better going forward. Again, this is really his first, you know, not phenomenal game that I've seen him play. So Nick Hart and Noah Scarver, two walk-ons. Again, your depth is just seriously tested, and it came to fruition there on Saturday. So there's just, again, no magic button to get these guys healthy. Again, Minnesota had no idea that Duke Onyanwu and Lincoln Plezic would be up. So the road grading tight end and the tight end they were expecting to be the playmaking one, you throw in, you know, where's Jerry Gibson? Well, Jerry Gibson finally played on the special teams this past weekend. And I was rewatching the game this morning, and they came back from commercial break, and there he was on the training table with a huge bag of ice being taped to his ankle. So I wouldn't expect anything out of him going forward. So, you're going to now go into true freshmen. So Colton Beebe, be ready. And I doubt Bryce Whitham gets his red shirt burned, as I know that they really want to preserve that and get some weight on him. But Colton Beebe's got to be ready to go here, as I can guarantee you, knowing Rob Reeves a little bit, the tight ends coach, he's probably not very happy this past Sunday or Monday whenever they reviewed film looking back at his tight ends performance. So getting Brandon Lingan, who's expected back this weekend, is going to help tremendously. But, again, there's just some depth issues there, and both the offensive line and the tight end group just need to play better if this run game is going to get established so that Leidner and this passing offense can get going a little bit. But, you know, another opportunity to rebound is this weekend, and again, I fully expect them to do so. So we'll see how things go.
All right, let's talk about the running back group. You know, not a lot of holes to navigate this week. You know, obviously we talked about the struggles with the offensive line, tight end. So I'm interested to hear your perspective, Derek, on the running backs as a whole.
It was a tough game to evaluate the running back for things that we mentioned earlier. I think that they were, you know, we're running in a lot of predictable situations, running against you know, running against a team that was geared towards stopping it, that had game plan towards stopping the Gophers run. And then, you know, the, some of the play that we mentioned in the blocking didn't help. So, help out the running back. So it was a tough game for those guys to get anything going. You know, there were a couple, in the second half, there were a couple plays that I think the running backs would like to have back, a couple of reads where, they had some success taking the zone running play, play side, and then they kind of got infatuated with that and missed a couple cutbacks in the second half that, again, they would probably like to have back. But overall, you know, I guess I think they did okay. I think that, you know, they saw some good things in the pass blocking for being able to pick up guys in the edge. That's where they're going to need help. If they, if the Gophers want to run more three wide receiver sets, they're going to need help from these backs, helping on a defensive end or picking up a blitz or things like that. So I thought they did okay there. I thought they struggled a little bit at the fullback position. You know, that they missed missed a couple blocks and probably like to do better there, some room for improvement. But, you know, overall for the group, I thought they ran hard. I thought they didn't, you know, they didn't let the game get them down. I thought they kept at them and maintained their, you know, maintained their effort as the game went on and didn't get discouraged. But, so overall, I think okay, but just it's a tough game to evaluate. I guess the last thing I'll say, maybe the brightest spot was a couple nice, was nice to see a couple, passes out of the backfield, which is a nice, to get that on film. They hit Rodney Smith on a flat route and maybe a couple of them were able to pick up some big gains. It's nice to get that on film because those defenses that the Gophers will be taking on in the coming weeks will be they're going to have a game plan for that. So they're not going to be able to have a safety jump some of those inside routes, you know, stay on the post all the time. They're going to have to make sure they have a guy covering the flat or if in man coverage that they're not cheating against the run and they're releasing when that running back comes out. So that was nice to see and probably the highlight, I would guess, of the running back play on Saturday.
As Derek said, it was just tough sledding. I mean, looking at the Gophers running backs and their totalages on Saturday, Rodney Smith had 30 carries, Roderick Williams had 6, and they both combined for a net of 91. So it's just, that's less than 100 yards, so it's they just have to figure some things out. And again, I don't question the effort of any of these guys on offense. I know that they're out there giving it their all. It's just the execution is something that was lacking, and it is what it is at this point. So, I mean, Rodney just really didn't have any holes to go to. I think there were probably 2 or 3 runs out of the 30 he had that maybe he wanted to have back, maybe bounce it outside a little bit more, maybe, you know, run through that one more of an arm tackle or something. But again, he didn't really have too much of a place to go. So it's tough to, like, as Derek said, evaluate really what, you know, I didn't think that they left too many yards out there. Did you, Derek?
No, you know, they were sure they would like to break more tackles and there were, but not in the situation where you're wide open and you've got one guy to beat and you want to have that back. I mean, a lot of their tackles, as the stats would indicate, were within 3 or 4 yards of the line of scrimmage. So they weren't able to get momentum and weren't able to just didn't have the space to make those guys miss and to get, you know, to break free. Probably a really frustrating game for those guys.
Yeah. And so again, it's tough. Execution other positions is something that was lacking. So, I mean, I don't think Rodney Smith, who again had his career high of 30 carries, which I didn't really even realize until looking back at the stats today. So, I mean, he's a bell cow back. I don't think there's any question about that going forward. I had a little bit of a doubt in my mind heading into this game that I don't know that Minnesota will let him get 20, 25, 30 carries. Well, turns out I was wrong, as I'll continue to be about some things. So 30 carries for 82 yards, it's tough to evaluate. So I don't question the effort on the running backs, the quarterbacks, the tight ends, the O-line. It's just the execution has to be better. So
Overall, as a group, I thought they didn't leave too many yards out there to be gained. So hopefully they have some bigger running lanes and better execution of play calls going forward.
All right, now we have the opportunity to talk about everybody's favorite part of the offense to rip, which would be the passing game. So let's start with wide receivers and end with quarterback. Derek, what were your assessment of the wide receivers in this game?
I thought it was an up and down game for those guys. On the positive side, didn't see the drops that we've seen in the previous couple games. And I know there were some, I guess technically were drops, but you know, if you're diving out or laying out for a ball or get your hand on it, that's a little different than something that's hitting you on the numbers and you're just dropping a ball that you should really have. So I think that was nice. And you know, they did have some nice, nice plays. And good catches. A couple corner routes were thrown into tight coverage. They were able to come away with some nice catches on the sideline. Of course, the touchdown catch was a nice little scheme. The fake jet sweep and the run back out against man coverage. So I think on the positives for those guys would be, you know, again, came away with some nice catches and ran some nice routes. Even the player Rodney Smith was able to get out and have a big game. Walatarski ran a really nice in route to bring the safety in to jump on that route, which was allowed Rodney to get open in the flat, wide open in the flat without a defender and take it for like 15 plus yards. So on the other side of it, you know, they really struggled to get on the outside. They struggled to get off man press coverage. Just didn't have a lot of guys open. I will say, a lot of times you have to consider they were passing in a lot of really obvious passing situations. I mean, after a penalty in their, you know, second 20 or third and 15, it's that like, you know, like running against an extra defender in the box, that's just tough. You know, those guys are going to be, they're going to be sitting on pass and they're going to be set up to, you know, to defend that. And so that's tough. But at the same time, they've got to get better. I mean, they really have, I think, you know, May has been able to get off press coverage. And I think in a different way, I think Eric Carter has done a pretty decent job with some of his routes. Now he's on the outside, though, it's going to be interesting to see what they do with him, because he's really not your go route guy. He's not going to go up and jump up and catch, you know, catch fades and go routes, you know, 40 yards downfield. But he was able and is able to get off press coverage and get inside for a slant, and had that a couple times on Saturday. So I guess, you know, the interesting part with this group is it's kind of fun, as much as the past game has struggled, it's been kind of fun to watch them move these guys around and running different routes and seeing who's doing what and how they're progressing. You know, they've moved Walatarski inside. I think they like him better inside. He's doing a little bit better being inside and getting some matchup, some mismatches against an outside linebacker or strong safety, as opposed to having him with a bigger body trying to get off press coverage on the outside and run deep. And then, you know, with the younger guys, I think, you know, we see their athleticism and they've got speed and they're learning, and it looks like it. You know, they've got a ways to go. Just, you know, learn with repetition, develop some football IQ, and be able to, you know, come away with more of those passes and, you know, be able to get off coverage and get open. So overall for the wide receiver group, again, just up and down, I would say, I guess if I were the wide receiver coach, he's probably saying they need to play better, you know, at the end of the day. And when you look at the passing game as a whole, they need help. The passing game in general needs help. And so that's how they can contribute. They've got to get open. It doesn't matter if it's a passing situation or not. So I think they'd like to play better overall. But they did have some nice moments.
Yeah, and I just think, and I was talking about this with Matt Humber and of the Daily Gopher last night on Twitter, I think that they just need to figure out what their rotation is at X and Z, the X and Z receiver positions. And as I think Y is pretty well set with Drew Walatarski there in the slot, I think it's a niche he's found. And it's interesting that he wasn't targeted as much this game. Maybe it's game plan dependent. I'm not quite sure what it was. But just the X and the Z receiver position to me outside of KJ May have been a little confusing to me. You know, I understand that Eric Carter is a talented receiver. But I'd rather not have him continue to run go routes against guys of his size when you can throw up somebody out there like Melvin Holland, who's 6'3", Rashad Still, 6'6", or Isaiah Gentry, who's 6'5". Again, on Leiter's first interception there, I thought, yes, it was underthrown, but if you had a guy maybe of Rashad Still's size, who's 6'6" instead of 5'10", and I thought it was more of a 50-50 ball than truly significantly underthrown like the second one, I think Rashad could have probably made that play. So it's just consistency from this group, and it's something fans should have been expecting coming into the season, as the only two guys that had seen significant game snaps were KJ and Drew Olatarski. Eric Carter had never seen really snaps coming into the season. Melvin Holland had never played. Isaiah Gentry, who came back, who I thought we were going to see a lot more of, as he's returning from a hamstring injury, but I only saw him out there for probably 4 or 5 snaps. I'm guessing the staff wanted to be careful with him to not re-injure that, so they have him for the Big Ten play. But you have a bunch of guys who are just learning to play, and it's frustrating at times. So, again, there's talent there. It's just the consistency, as Derek said. These guys are learning to play. They're learning how to adjust against college football players from scout guys in practice, and even before that from their high school. So it's just you have to figure out the X and the Z position, I think. I think KJ obviously has his role, but outside of him, I mean, it's just frustrating to try and give Leitner something to throw to. As Derek said, they struggle with the getting off press coverage, and I'm guessing it'll just come with time. So an up and down day, there were some good moments, there were some bad, and we'll see how they progress going into even this weekend's game against Ohio. So again, it's a young receiving core, but I mean, they have to keep growing, and they need to, keep getting better to have Leitner or whoever the Gopher quarterback is to have a chance in the passing game.
All right, let's talk about that all-important quarterback position, the one that so many people like to discuss and scrutinize and obviously be that Sunday morning or Monday morning quarterback. Let's talk about Mitch's performance. You know, in this game, maybe, finally he had thrown an interception. It had been a while since he had done that. And, probably underthrew two balls that I don't see that he normally underthrows balls, especially deep routes. I could be wrong about that, but he seems to me to usually overthrow those passes. So I'd like to get your perspective, Derek, and hear what you thought of Mitch's performance.
Well, I don't think it's changed much from the first couple weeks, and by that I mean I'll kind of repeat what I've been saying. I think that he's mentally been okay. I think that his reads, identifying defenses, both pre and post snap, being able to find the guy he wants to throw to, I think he's doing pretty good. I don't think, again, he's not making, glaring errors, missing, scanning over guys that are wide open, end up making bad decisions, thinking it's, man coverage when it's zone and throwing and having a guy take something back for a pick six on him. So that's not been an issue. But he's had consistent trouble hitting his spots. He's had some nice throws, but he's had too many throws where he needs to put it on. He makes the right – it's frustrating because he makes the, right identification. He goes through his progression. He identifies the right guy, and you just can't hit him. You just can't hit the spot. And so that's something that I think last year he was up and down. This year, through three games, he's not pulled himself out of that rut. I think it's – like I said, he's kind of had the same, he's had the same issue in all three games. I guess to give you an example, there was a play in the first half where they hit Rodney Smith for a nice gain on a flat route for a third down. It was on a third down. They got a first down for like 20 yards. They came back the next series or the series after with the same play. Kent State had it defended. They had a zone underneath. And Mitch went through at least two, if not three receivers in a progression and came back and threw the goal route to Still, and it ended up being the second interception. So he just didn't make the throw. So it was it was a play that 90% of the play he did really well, was able to again, look off receivers, identify the coverage, identify who's covered, look back at his second or his third or fourth option and throw the ball. But when you're throwing it that late, you have to bomb the ball on a go route. And he threw it late and he didn't step into the throw and didn't throw it out there. And as a result, the corner who was playing with inside leverage was able to just sit like a center fielder and come down with the ball. So I think that's, again, what we've seen through the first couple games, and he's got other coaches I'm sure they're working with him, and they're trying to identify things that to help him succeed and maybe routes that he's doing better with than others and put him in a position to, to get him going. But overall, they need more. They need him to hit those, those four or five passes where they're open, the play works against the defense, receiver gets open, and you need to hit those guys. He's got to come through. So I think, overall he's got to get better. He's got to pull himself out.
My question for you, Derek, is before I start to expand on any thoughts, is the number one question I've received definitely over the last 3 weeks since this Gopher season started is, throw Demaryius Croft in there, the true freshman, see what he can do. It can't be any worse. Can't be any worse than Mitchell Eidner. So what are your thoughts on if Minnesota were to put in, change quarterbacks? Do you think, it would be – I guess the question I'm trying to ask you is, do you think that Mitch Leidner is the number one issue with this offense?
Well, I think that – I guess if I could call it a tie between the offensive line and Mitch Leidner, I think that would be fair. To answer your question about playing another guy and putting another guy in there, the one thing that I think this kill staff is takes a lot of consideration is game situation. So they're also looking at the way that they call a game, who plays, how much they play. They really look at what the situations in the game are. So by that I mean, I think if Mitch continues to struggle hitting his spots, and they really need him, and they're, for example, we'd hate to see it, but if they're down against, one of these opponents upcoming and they get down, 10-0 or 14-7 and it's late in the game, I think they will make a change. I don't think they'll hesitate, but thus far they haven't been in a position, the game situation hasn't begged for that yet. And I guess speaking to how he's played versus putting in a backup, just in general terms, I just want to say this: I haven't seen a Croft play, so I can't speak to that, and only the coaches know how he's done, practice in, practice out. But one thing to consider is you have a player in there now that is doing well enough on the mental aspect of the game, being able to again read things pre and post snap, identify the right receiver, identify coverages, but he's not hitting his spots. What you, in a general sense, and this isn't a judgment on Croft, but just in a general sense, putting in a freshman who may be a better athlete, there's a chance that you're going to have a guy that's flip-flop. So he's going to be a better athlete. He throws perhaps a better ball. Perhaps he's more accurate. Perhaps he can throw it farther or harder and zip it in there in tight windows. But there's also a chance that he's not going to get the first part right, or at least not to the same degree. So it's tough to have a guy go in there that can physically get it done, but if he's not able to identify coverages, read things pre and post snap, and find the open receiver, it doesn't matter how well he throws the ball. So I'm not saying that's the case because I just don't know. But that's something that has to be considered. And I'll close the thought by saying working with a guy on the mental aspect is an easier part of coaching. It's tougher to coach a guy to hit his spots and to work on him with that. It's a lot of repetition and it's tougher to coach. But usually the problems in the mental game tend to be more detrimental. So having a guy that's making all the right reads but just not hitting his spots usually ends up in completion, balls that are underthrown, overthrown, yes, they can end up in an interception, but not usually. Having a guy that can throw the ball really well but has having problems mentally in the game, that usually ends up being interceptions. So we all know how guarded this staff is against, you know, protecting the ball and turning the ball over, and I'm sure that's a priority for them. So just something to consider, Ryan. You've seen more of both quarterbacks to be able to make a better judgment of it. But in general, just something to think about, and that's not a pro Leidner, that's not an anti-Croft, that's just a consideration. So, but at the end of the day, I think they will, if they, when they need it and they need to call on it and they feel like they need help there, and they know they have to win games. I mean, they know this is this day and age that you know, people and contracts and the teams and the athletic directors are not looking 4 years down the road. They want wins. So I don't think they'll hesitate if they need to.
Yeah, I hear you. You know, this is just a subject that, you know, I think is being, while it deserves to be talked about a ton, it's an issue. So, I mean, I'm going to disagree with Derek for, I think, the first time ever and say that while Leidner, it is an issue, the quarterback playing, the consistency and hitting spots when he needs to, and it seems like there's, you know, three or four just egregious throws every game, and seems that those are the ones the fans focus on, is obviously that they were that bad. But and then obviously it was on display with when he threw the go route to Rashad Still that was underthrown by about 10 yards for an easy pick, and rolling across the formation there to his left and missing a wide open Drew Olatarski, who had been one-on-one with the DB for a 60-yard touchdown. I can go on, but I just think that it's tough to establish the kind of running game, the kind of offense that Minnesota has to run, or doesn't have to run, that Matt Leinweber wants to run, when you can't open anything up in the running game. It's, you know, fans can make fun of the play calling all they want, and even certain members of the media, where it's run, run, pass, and three and out. But it's just, it's tough. Derek, I think, outlined it perfectly on Twitter earlier today, where, you know, Minnesota had a game plan coming in, you know, to try and take advantage of these one-on-one matchups on the outside. But the two interceptions surely didn't help, and I think they abandoned the game plan. And that's why you saw such a switch from we're going to attack this defense to what are we going to do to win this game? Because at the end of the day, these coaches know it's their jobs on the line, and as pretty as it might, or as ugly as it might be, they want to get a W and put that in the box for the next day. So I think, I can't know for sure, and I'm speculating at this point, but I think that there was a clear switch. I mean, maybe at halftime or halfway through the third quarter, where it was like, we just can't attack these matchups on the outside. Kill is all about risk aversion, and he knew that the risk was there, and so I think that between he and Leinweber, they abandoned it, and they did what they had to do to win. And it was clear that Jerry Kill was very frustrated afterwards because of that, just in general with this offense, and why he declined to answer any questions about the quarterback position. And that whole press conference, I could take 5 minutes on it. But again, I think that Jerry Kill quote and that Jerry Kill video that I think everybody's seen about, maybe you should fire me, you know, my lake house. Again, if you weren't at that press conference, that was one of the strangest press conferences I've been to. And I think that Kill's reaction, I wouldn't say it was warranted, but it certainly was not warranted. After Kill had said repeatedly through that press conference, I don't want to answer any questions about the quarterbacks, and certain members of the media kept asking. So he got sick of it, and he answered how he thought was accordingly. But I reported this a few hours before kickoff that Demaryius Croft was actually supposed to play on Saturday. He was. I mean, the game script, you know, was supposed to be Minnesota was up 27-10 in the fourth quarter, and Demery comes in for a few series. As Minnesota's got to figure out who their backup quarterback is, because, again, I think Derek and I could spend 20 minutes on this, is what are they actually doing with Chris Strebler? That is my – I mean, I've been, that's the question that's been percolating in my mind all day. If he's not your backup quarterback, what is he?
because he needed to be on the field somewhere because he's one of the best athletes on the team. He's 6'2", 6'3", 230 pounds. He's one of the top 10 fastest guys on the team. You know, he was experimenting some at tight end and H-back. If you told me 3 weeks ago that Minnesota was down their top three tight ends and H-backs and Chris Trevor still wasn't playing there, I would have been baffled. He's so physical and he's one of the best athletes on this team that I just don't know why he isn't being utilized. And again, I'm not the coach. I don't make the decisions and that's not my job. So again, I'm not as good as any of these other armchair quarterbacks out there. But with the quarterback position of Mitch Leidner, I mean, I think Saturday, again, I don't know this for sure, but I would bet that Minnesota plays two quarterbacks, and I bet they're Mitch Leidner, and I bet you Demaryius Crowe. So Minnesota knows what they want. My huge hesitation with all the fans clamoring for Demaryius Crowe is I don't want it to be a David Carr effect. And for fans who don't know who David Carr is, I believe Derek's the one in the NFL. He's his younger brother. But David Carr was the first overall pick by the Houston Texans, I think it was in 2001 or 2002. His offensive line was atrocious for 2-3 years where, you know, David was one of the most talented quarterbacks, obviously. He was the number one pick, and then he got gun-shy. And because of all the hits he was taking, and with this offensive line really struggling at this point in time and not a lot of playmakers outside at the receiver position at the tight end, I don't want to throw Demery out there and just have him have a bad experience and his whole mindset and mechanics change. And again, I think Leidner is used to it. It is what it is. I mean, you can take from that quote whatever you want to, but I would love for Demery to come in and have some kind of protection. Again, it's just, The play that just keeps sticking back out to me is Kent State rushes two guys. The nose guard literally goes back into a spy, and both tackles get beaten and meet at the quarterback. I don't want that to be Demery. I don't. But, I mean, maybe he is the spark that this offense needs if they won't throw against these 7-8-guy boxes. I don't know. But to me, again, this offense, there's a lot of, you know, quote-unquote blame to go around, but I have a hard time putting it solely on the quarterback. It is what it is. Mitch's passes aren't pretty, and everybody hates it. I understand that. Again, I shouldn't say everybody hates it. There's a large majority of people who like to make themselves vocal, but he's not the biggest issue with this offense. I just don't believe that that's true, but we'll see what happens on Saturday. I got to believe Demaryius Crowe gets a series or two, but we'll see. I was wrong on Saturday because the game script, you know, didn't go the way that it was. But we'll see. We will see. So again, it's a frustrating part, especially after that game and performance on Saturday. So hopefully Ohio, again, 3-0, the team that beat Marshall, who was ranked in the top 25 last year, and the Marshall team that beat Purdue. So no slouch. So hopefully this offense figures something out heading into Saturday.
All right, let's finish up real quickly. Derek, what was your assessment of the coaching job done in this game? I know Kill in the press conference tried to take some of the blame for the performance specifically of the offense. And I'd just like to hear your feedback and what you kind of thought of the coaching job in this game from the staff as a whole.
Sure. Well, I thought on defense, not much to say. As I mentioned at the beginning, the fact that the team was playing so aggressive just looked really comfortable out there. I think that's a credit to the game plan and the credit to the coaches. They had guys in position. There wasn't anything Kent State ran that they looked uncomfortable with or were taken off guard by. You know, on offense, it was an interesting day. I guess in my opinion, I felt like, as Ryan touched on earlier, schematically with them overloading the box and putting man coverage outside, you know, the book on that is to get guys downfield, hit them for some deep passes, and bring those guys out of that, scheme. And I thought that they tried that early. And after the two interceptions, I thought that they went away from that, which made it really tough. I really, in the second half, again, in my opinion, I felt like the coaches made the decision to continue to run the ball into those overloaded boxes and just accept the 1 to 4 yard gains. As long as the defense was playing the way it was and the punting was going the way it was, I felt like they wanted to do what they could to win the come out and come out of the game with a win. And so, if the game had unfolded differently, we hopefully would have seen some different play selection. And I would guess I would say on offense, it would be nice to see them against that type of scheme throw more play action, maybe some more bootleg, get guys out of the pocket and running and get that defense running out of the box, get them running laterally side to side. You know, the passes that they did were mainly in obvious passing situations, which just didn't help them. So, again, just a sort of an odd game, play calling wise, and definitely not their, the coaches would probably say not their best effort. But ultimately, again, it's my opinion that they made that decision in order to, you know, they just felt that Kent State couldn't move the ball on offense, and so they felt that they would just run the ball and keep the clock going and you know, be conservative and not turn the ball over and win the game with a low score. So overall, again, defensively, coaching staff I thought was great. Offensively, I think given the game situation, things changed and it wasn't pretty. So it'll be interesting moving forward to see how they change some of these things or whether they change and see what they bring as the season goes on.
Defensively, I don't think Tracy Clays could have called a better day. I'm on the bandwagon that Clays needs to get something. Clays needs to get a raise, everybody. Clays has been I can't understate how well this Gopher defense is well off with Tracy Clays at the helm. You saw how devastating this Gopher defense made the Kent State offense look. And again, just from a defensive standpoint, I don't think they could have played any better. On the offensive side of things, I touched on this when talking about the quarterbacks. I think Lyon Grover and Kill in the second half definitely had a change in their game plan, and they went to a risk aversion, where the game plan coming in was if they do load the box, they take these one-on-one shots to the outside. And the tough part about it is for Gopher fans, Minnesota was 0-for-2 with two picks. I mean, who's to blame? I don't know. I know that everybody likes to look for somebody to blame, and I just think that it's a collective effort. I mean, it's the quarterbacks, it's the receivers, it's the offensive line, it's everyone. So, I mean, you can say that Matt Lyon Grover, you know, his play calling at times can be monotonous, and you can even call it yourself. But again, I just think that the whole game plan switched when Minnesota couldn't connect on those one-on-one balls, and the staff didn't feel comfortable in having Leidner make the throw. So it was ugly, and it was, and I don't know. It's something where I think that, you know, Kill, I think, said it best. We, you know, everybody's got to look at themselves in the mirror. And I think that's from the coaching staff themselves down to the players, and especially obviously on offense here, they got to figure some things out, and hopefully they figure them out sooner rather than later, and sooner being this weekend against Ohio, and hopefully the later never comes. So, I don't know how much of it would benefit from a change of quarterback. I know everybody loves to talk about the quarterback changes. The backup quarterback is obviously always the most popular guy in the team until he comes in, and then who's the backup after him? So, again, I'm just not buying in 100% that Minnesota's offense would have this huge revolutionary change if Demaryius Crowe comes in the game. I just don't buy it. I don't. So maybe Minnesota needs to go to a two-quarterback system where Leidner and Croft, rotate reps. But, again, I'm not a huge proponent of that, as if one gets into a rhythm and you feel bad that the other one, I shouldn't say feel bad. I don't know what the correct word choice there for, but, again, one gets into a rhythm and you feel like you have to play the other one, so you put him in, and then he goes 3-and-out, and then it's like, well, why did I do that? I'm someone who I think you pick a quarterback and you commit to it. Does Minnesota have to figure out who they actually want to commit to? I think you could probably make some kind of an argument, but again, it's just I think Mitch Leidner's the guy for now, but I do want to see Demaryius Crock get some snaps. Again, if you're not going to use Chris Streveler as your backup, then they need to find out who the backup is. And so it's tough. It is. So I just think that the whole offense as a whole needs to look at the performance on Saturday, say, what can I do better? You know, understand that it wasn't a great day for them last Saturday, and look forward to this Saturday and say, okay, what can I get better on, and how can I go and execute the game plan? Because whatever the game plan is, whether obviously fans like it or not, it's going to be Matt Leingrover's game plan. So it'll be interesting to see how this offense bounces back on Saturday. And I think they will. I think this offense as a whole is going to come out, I hope, extremely angry. Personally, I wouldn't mind if all five guys in the offensive line got some kind of a, personal foul. Derek, I mean, you can tell me I'm wrong, but again, I want my offensive linemen to be pissed. I want them to be angry. I want them to really, reflect on what happened the week prior and come out with an edge to them. So, any final thoughts there?
Yeah, well, just on that last comment that you made, I think what you'll see from the offensive line this week, because, it's always a prideful group, and I think you're going to see a change on the physical part, and I certainly hope we do. And, in situations like this, what coaches typically do is, they come back and they say, look, guys, we have the X's and O's. We're not going to spend time, we'll look at the front and talk through that, but they'll say, on Saturday, go out and be physical. It doesn't matter who you're blocking, and the adage is, if you're going to block the wrong guy, block the wrong guy as hard as you can. Don't be tentative about it. So
exactly.
I've seen games like this before. Illinois last year was probably the closest from a physical standpoint, where the Gophers offensive line just wasn't up to par. Usually that next week they come back again from a physical standpoint and are able to respond. And not predicting, given the game plans and things, how successful they'll be running the ball, but I think they will bounce back from a physicality standpoint, and so we'll look for that on Saturday.
Yeah, absolutely. Again, I'm expecting a bounce back game from the offensive line. Again, I think they're going to have a fire lit under their tushes, and I think the tight end group gets healthier with Brandon Lingen coming back. I think Nate Wozniak is going to have a better game, and if those two things improve, obviously Rodney Smith should have a heck of a day on Saturday. If he, obviously as fans have seen, if Rodney Smith gets a hole, he's going to exploit it, and you're going to have a first down. So it should be a good one. I think that this offense is going to come out with a lot of things to prove, and I think the defense, again, I shouldn't say ever, but I think this defense is going to be something that is going to be one of the best potentially in the last 20, 30 years for the season. So that'll wrap things up here for the Breakdown Podcast here on Gopher Gridiron Radio. So again, we can't thank everybody enough for listening, and to us, Derek and I and Luke, just trying to figure out the struggles of this Gopher team on the offensive side of the ball, and trying to highlight as much we can this Gopher defense. Is one of that performance they put on Saturday was one of the best in recent memory. So Derek, Luke, and I can't thank you enough for joining once again, and we'll see you next week.